Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 I'm going to read this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 20. Yesterday we read from 21, and today is from Chapter 20. The verses that we're going to be discussing are 27 and 28. The title of the chapter is Conversation Between Maitreya and Vidura. So just a little backdrop of this conversation. Krishna has just spoken Uddhava Gita to Uddhava. Hearing the conversation was Maitreya. He just happened to be in the right place of the forest and the right time and heard the whole Uddhava Gita. Krishna discussing wonderful topics. And following that, Krishna left the planet. His pastimes were about to be concluded. It's the last discussion, conversation with Krishna in his pastimes. Krishna said to Maitreya, very soon, Uddhava is going to come to this very same place in 2 or 3 days. Like we heard last night, what Vishnu said to Kardamuni, in 2 days, Swayambhu Manda is going to come to this very place in the forest. So he's the orchestrator of pastime, so he knows what's going to happen before it happens. And when Vidura comes, I'm going to give you some service. Getting service from Krishna is very special. If you can get some service from Krishna, you're really fortunate. And in the case of Maitreya, it was just to help him sustain his life because he had become completely attached to Krishna. Krishna was going to leave. And in separation from Krishna, that which would sustain his life and give him some ongoing opportunity for serving Krishna, that's connection with Krishna, that's life. He said, I wish you to instruct Vidura. Vidura is my very dear devotee. So you have heard, now you share with him what you've heard. Disciplic succession like that. And Krishna left. Many other things happened, but then Maitreya left that immediate place and he went to the north country because the forest was a forest in Vrindavan, and he went into the mountain area. Vidura came. Vidura saw Uddhava, some 2 or 3 chapters of discussion between Vidura and Uddhava. Uddhava told Vidura, Maitreya is my elder. You should go hear from him. And besides, Krishna has given me some service, and off I go. So Uddhava left. Vidura went to find Maitreya. He found Maitreya and he began some discussions with him. A lot of, very important understandings of approaching a sadhu, inquiring from a sadhu, all those very, very essential things that reoccur, the theme of them occur again and again, so that we can understand how we should conduct ourselves. And Maitreya is very happy because Vidura is such a qualified person to hear and discuss Krishna Katha with. So that's part of the exchange. in between the two of them. And prior to hearing from Krishna, Maitreya was not on the same platform as Uddhava, meaning he was very learned. He was a yogi with some attention to the personality of Godhead Vishnu, but in his meditation as a yogi, meditating upon Super Soul. But he didn't have that same caliber as Uddhava. But by hearing from Krishna as he heard, he became highly qualified also in a devotional way. And seeing Vidura made him think of Krishna, because Vidura was part of the royal family, and at least the Pandava portion of the royal family were the best of Krishna's devotees. Krishna confirms this in Bhagavad Gita about Arjuna and the other Pandavas also. So seeing Vidura, he was very happy thinking of Krishna. That which reminds us of Krishna makes us happy, in other words, for one who's a devotee. Vidura's questions about Krishna go, first of all, perhaps surprisingly, to the process of creation. And in that presentation of the process of creation, it's described as a lila. Nor do we think of lila as something else. We think of lila as Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill. That's lila. Or Damodar lila, Mother Jasoda binding Krishna. Or Mother Jasoda looking inside the mouth of Krishna to see if he had swallowed dirt. Or so many other lilas. Raja lila. Or killing Kamsa, Mathura lila. Or Dwarka lila. But creation isn't something we normally think of as lila, but it's specifically identified as lila. It's one of the Lord's pastimes. So he wants to hear about it. So, lengthy, detailed. So detailed, you just want to, at least when I first was reading over, just flip over those chapters and go to the next chapter where you hear something that's, different. It's very, very technical. The interest that Vidura had was not just technical. He didn't want a graduate study on creation so he could get a master's or a PhD in knowing about creation. It was understanding the Lord and his lila. As other features of the Raja lila and Mathura lila and so forth come later, because it's more difficult to understand or confidential. This is also very confidential, but in any case, details and details about creation. And so the overview picture is the Bhagavatam is presenting in that section one of the 10 essential topics of the Bhagavatam, which is Sarga, creation. And then following Sarga is Visarga, sub-creation. That Sarga is what Vishnu does and Visarga is what Brahma does, and till the appearance of Lord Brahma and all of what he went through, and then he's, in this section, he's beginning the creation. And actually it goes back further, the creation of the Kumaras, the first of the sons of Lord Brahma. And that takes the whole discussion over into the Kumaras going to the gates of Vaikuntha and Jayan Vijay being cursed and all of that. And then some discussion about Lord Varaha, the appearance of Lord Varaha to kill Hiranyaksha, and then it comes back to the sub-creation. Because after after the four Kumaras comes Lord Shiva, and then following Lord Shiva, at least that feature of Lord Shiva is Rudra, and in his angry mood he expands it to 10 other Rudras and starts tearing up the universe that Lord Brahma just created. And he says, you know, just cool it. Just go and meditate. And your time to destroy will come later. I'll let you know when. You can just go meditate for a while. Then other aspects. Part of the duty of creating that Lord Brahma takes on is it's very confidential, and therefore very special, very privileged. Brahma has to be very qualified, so qualified that if there isn't a qualified jiva, the Supreme Lord takes the post. It's such an important post. But there are features of creation that are horrific. I mean, we notice some of them. But, you know, the principle of degradation is provided within creation. So it's not a nice task. And those things show up in the very beginning of creation. It mentions, for example, just going back a bit, text 18, Brahma created from his shadow the coverings of ignorance of the conditioned souls. They are five in number. Varieties of ignorance, take your pick. Tamishra, Undatamishra, Tamas Moha, and Mahamoha. And it describes them. It's part of his duty to do that, but seeing the effect, Brahma becomes disgusted. So he threw off the body of ignorance, taking this opportunity. Yakshas and Rakshasas sprang into being to possess the body. Oh, you know, a bad thing, get rid of it, but it didn't get rid of it. It just expanded. The Yakshas and Rakshasas, overpowered by hunger and thirst, they ran to devour Lord Brahma. Spare him not! Eat him up! Brahma, the head of the demigods, full of anxiety, asked them, "Do not eat me, but protect me. You were born for me and have become my sons. Therefore you are Yakshas and Rakshasas." These are the same Yakshas, if you recall, that later in the fourth canto, they kill the stepbrother of Dhruva, and Dhruva goes to fight them at the capital of the Yakshas. So, you know, they were around since the beginning of creation. He then created the chief demigods, Brahma, who are shining with the glory of goodness. So goodness is also there in creation, along with the mode of ignorance. He dropped before them the effulgent form of daytime, and the demigods sportingly took possession of it. Lord Brahma then gave birth to the demons from the backside of his body. And then they started chasing Lord Brahma. The worshipful Brahma first laughed at their stupidity, but then finding the shameless asuras closing in upon him, he grew indignant and ran in great haste out of fear. So even become Lord Brahma, look out. Anywhere in the material world, tough. So then Brahma took shelter of the Personality of Godhead. He approached the Personality of Godhead, who bestows all boons and who dispels the agony of his devotees and those who take shelter of his lotus feet. He, Personality of Godhead, manifests his innumerable transcendental forms for the satisfaction of his devotees. So then, 26, because our verses are 27, 28, 26, he begins his prayer saying, "This was done by me under your order." Because that's the position of a great devotee like Lord Brahma. They don't do anything other than under the order of the Supreme Lord. You know, it's not like he gave him, "Okay, this is your assignment for this morning. Here you go, make these demons." But rather, from within his heart, he was inspired in this process of creation to make, you know, the whole, because the whole place is upper, middle, and lower. We heard about some of the lower, and we heard about some of the upper, and now there's some more of the lower. It's just part of the configuration of creation. "They are infuriated by an appetite for sex and have come to attack me." Text 27. It's these morning verses. "My Lord, you are the only one capable of ending the affliction of the distressed and inflicting agony on those who never resort to your feet," which is very similar in message to the fourth chapter verse of Bhagavad Gita, "Pritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduspritam dharma sangstap anartaya sambhavami yuge yuge," just dealing with the first two. So these are features of the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada says it indicates two concerns. As we have concerns, where do we get that propensity? Comes from God. He has concerns. And one is to give protection of those who take shelter of him, and the second is to give trouble to those who are always demoniac and who are inimical towards the Lord. And he does throw through some agency. That's the agency of Maya. I mean, sometimes he directly, but otherwise indirectly. But even the indirectly, it's him. It's like an instrument. Like a sword. So the sword in the hand of the soldier or the fighter. The sword is the instrument, and it's moved by the hand of the soldier or the fighter. So Maya is like that. Maya jakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Prakriti is his instrument. And it's an instrument that's working under remote control. Remember the last time I visited in the Palatine community, there was one little boy that had a little race car with a remote control device, and it was going zoom 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 up and down the street, then do a U-turn, come back around and up down. And so there was a little boy walking down the street that didn't see the remote control other little boy, just saw that this car going up and down the street, and he was like literally pondering what's going on. And the father of the little boy was laughing to see the fun, and the little boy was, you know, like kind of like tormenting the one that didn't know about his little device. And then he, you know, went out and made fun of him. So, but like that, like the remote control, the Krishna, by remote control, he doesn't have to have his hands on the, you know, gears and levers. It's remote. It's so remote that he just wills and it happens. And in this case, he's willing things through the agency of Lord Brahma. And Brahma does. So he certainly, as a Lord Vishnu, certainly knows what Brahma is up to. he's giving Brahma the ability to do what Brahma does. And Brahma knows the Supreme Lord. They know each other very intimately. You, Lord Vishnu, my father, literally, you have these two concerns. You protect and you admonish. And the admonishing is through the agency of Maya. Maya's function is to give afflictions to the non-devotees. Here Brahma said, quote, "You are the protector of the surrendered souls. Therefore I surrender unto your lotus feet. Please give me protection from these demons." And it wasn't just like a self-serving and functional and utilitarian kind of surrender. Okay, he pulled this lever and that starts to move, so here I go, pull the lever, so you'll give me protection. It's his nature. He's highly qualified, but he's also fixed in knowledge, and so he doesn't get into the self-defense mode. He is seeking the Lord's protection. And then the next verse, 28, the Lord heard his words, but even before hearing his words, he knew perfectly the mind and the heart of Brahma. That's what's stated here. Text 28, the Lord, who can distinctly see the minds of others, perceived Brahma's distress and said to him, "Cast off this impure body of yours." That's all he said. I mean, it's all that's recorded here. There may have been like a longer statement, but it was a command. "Cast off this impure body of yours." Thus commanded by the Lord, Brahma cast off his body. What does that mean? Cast off his body. We're taught in the Bhagavatam that Brahma doesn't have a gross body like we have. He has a body. There's a soul and the covering of the soul. There's a body. But his body is subtle. And it's not, you know, thick and gross and coarse like ours. And I'll just read what's written in the commentary, specifically commented by Sridhar Swami. Who is Sridhar Swami? He's the commentator that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu referred to. The original commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam is Sridhar Swami. And he is the authority, according to Lord Chaitanya. Any subsequent commentaries must be in accord with Sridhar Swami's commentary. So he's authoritative for all generations to come. And here's what Sridhar Swami says. According to Sridhar Swami, Brahma's constant dropping of his body does not refer to his actually giving up his body. Rather, he suggests that Brahma gave up a particular mentality. After all, his body is subtle. But, you know, we have a gross body and a subtle body. And giving up our body could mean like the gross one. But at least in Brahma's case, as well as for our case, it can mean giving up a particular mentality. Here's what Prabhupada writes. "Mind is the subtle body of the living entity. We may sometimes be absorbed in some thought which is sinful. But if we give up the sinful thought, it may be said that we give up the body." So that's nice. You don't have to commit suicide. You just change your thought. And change your thought. But we all have experienced a tendency to think about something, even it may be an impure thought. It arises from someplace. It arises from contact with the modes of nature and karma. So there's a whole lot behind us that's pushing us towards something that's impure, as well as something that's pushing us towards pure. And the command of the Supreme Lord to give up the impure thought for Brahma was sufficient. He just gave up the impure thought and moved on. For us, it's not so easy because we're not so elevated. We're not so rarefied or purified. And so we have to tolerate, in the words of Bhagavad Gita, tatiksha, tongues tatiksha, svabharata. We have to tolerate what to do when some impure thought comes. You minimally, because that's the first instruction Krishna gives, is you tolerate. What prompts impure thoughts to arise? Here's a few causes. One is time. So it's like a seed. Tick, 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 tick. Like, you know, the seasons that change. And, you know, that things happen in fall and things happen in the winter and then things happen in the spring. And by the force of time, it's then springtime. And then, you know, circumstances that we're not in control of bring about spring. And things that were dormant become activated. You know, there's conditions that help create it being activated, but it's the force of time. We can just say, it's the position of the sun in relation to the earth, and you know that so many of those, but that's also behind that is time, and then time brings those circumstances about so that you know the seasonal event takes place, and just because it's a topic that I'm fascinated by. The whole concept of time is amazing. Kala Chakra, the Bhagavatam describes in this third canto that everything, every person, every living entity, every planet, every position within the universe, like whether it's a small circle of time or medium circle of time or big circle of time or huge circle of time or up to the realm of eternal time, things are moving by the force of time. And then as the Lord withdraws the time energy, it all collapses. Creation ends. Annihilation takes place. Everything goes back to a resting state. Tick, tick. Tick, tick. And at a certain point in time, the Lord has a desire for creation, and again there's creation. And the living entities go zoom, flinging into the dormant state of material elements, pradhan, and with the time energy, it starts all over again. The force of time is moving us all. And so that's one of these desires that are stored in a seed-like state, tick, tick, they fructify. We don't have to do anything. They just come about. There's a mechanism for all of that to happen. But the time energy is moving matter, just to keep it, because without all the technical detail. The mechanism by which time energy works is very complex. The whole creation is very complex. time energy moves it, and the desires come out. So that's one cause, just the movement of time. Fructifying our dormant karma. It's like in Nectar Devotion, it describes karma in four different stages. In a seed-like stage, beginning to sprout, just about matured. And there's names for each one of them. And like, we're all involved with the matured ones. Prarabdha karma. That's what's happening now. But beneath that is that which is about to happen, and beneath that which is just beginning to sprout, beneath that is stuff that's dormant. It's just waiting to happen. Tick, tick. As time passes. So desires may arise, but specifically the impure, we're speaking of that, the impure desires may arise, or sinful thoughts may arise, or past reminiscence. So that's another cause for a devotee, is the process of devotional service, or specifically the process of chanting. What the process of chanting does is it speeds up the whole process of cleansing. There's a verse in the second canto that describes remembrances of past things that we don't even necessarily connect to the past thing. We don't necessarily remember some previous life, something. And then slowly it comes like a bubble that's in the mud. There's some organic stuff in the mud, and it's decaying, so whatever it is, carbon dioxide forms. And so, but it's in the mud, so it doesn't come to the surface. It just like builds the pressure and builds the pressure and builds the pressure, and finally it bursts through the mud and comes wiggling up through the water, and we've all seen it in a little pond, and sits at the top, little bubble, and then merges with the air. Yes? Little bubble. And you don't have to just, you know, have to just stand there and tick, tick. And it happens. Then you get a stick and start stirring the mud. And all that stuff that's like, you know, hasn't come to the surface yet, comes to the surface. When we chant Hare Krishna, all that impure stuff that's like would just come out anyways, it comes out real quick. We go, oh my God, what's that? It's purification. Fortunately, because we're being trained in devotional service, we don't have to act on that impure desire. But if we weren't devotees, quite likely we would identify with that impure desire and act on that impure desire and perpetuate our karma further. At least be disturbed by it, if not act on it, and then create more karma. So the minimum recommendation of Bhagavad Gita is tolerate it. What is it? According to very early instruction of Bhagavad Gita, it's the desire to enjoy the senses contacting objects. Sam sparsha ja bhoga. Yehi sam sparsha ja bhoga dukha yonai evate. Matra sparshas tu kaunteya sitoshna sukha dukha da. That's all it is. You know, it's in principle, really simple. It's a desire to enjoy independently. It's false ego. And then false ego has its, you know, assistance. There are senses. And there's objects of the senses. Yes? It's how creation comes about. First is false ego, and then mixing with the mode of ignorance, there's the five elements and the five senses, five knowledge acquiring, five working senses, and five objects. Just to assist false ego in the mode of ignorance. And we get all caught up in it. And then there's the mind that is the repository of all the stuff, that the impressions of senses contacting sense objects, and it's stored, and then a desire comes. So we're supposed to tolerate it. So that's the third cause, is the previous contact with sense objects, is desires come. And the beginning part of transcendental life, you know, early chapter 2 Bhagavad Gita, don't get sucked into it. Don't be drawn by that attraction for the material energy to be an enjoyer of the material energy. And even the subtle type, the thought type, withdraw a consciousness, attention from there, and place it in transcendence. Place it upon Krishna. So that's what Lord Vishnu is telling Lord Brahma. And that's all it takes for Lord Brahma, is withdraw your mind. Give up that mentality. Don't contemplate the thought. Boom. He's protected. Really simple. If you're purified, elevated. If you're not, it's not so simple. It's all the yeah buts. Yeah, but it's really strong or something. So then comes sadhana. Well, we just practice it. You do the best you can, enriching your effort with those things that will help further purify. That's what sadhana is. And right at the center of our sadhana is the holy name. It's right at the center. It's like a diamond. Right in the center of all the other things that we do. It gives strength and efficacy to all of our other efforts. I'll just read Prabhupada's beautiful purport here. The Lord is described here by the word vivikta adhyatma darshana. It's in the Sanskrit of the verse. If anyone can completely perceive another's distress, so vivikta means without a doubt, adhyatma means the mind of others, and darshana, one who can see. Without a doubt, one who can see the mind of others. That's Krishna. The Lord is described here in these terms. If anyone can completely perceive another's distress, without a doubt, it's the Lord Himself. So nice. Prabhupada writes, if someone is in distress and wants to get relief from his friend, sometimes it so happens that his friend does not appreciate the volume of distress he is suffering. Sounds familiar? But for the Supreme Lord, it is not difficult. He's the best friend. I'm going to be speaking on this topic at the Naperville Center, so this is like a preview. But for the Supreme Lord, it is not difficult. The Supreme Lord, as Paramatma, is sitting within the heart of every living entity. And he directly perceives the exact causes of distress. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Sarvashyacham Riddhi Sannivishta, I am seated in everyone's heart. And because of me, one's remembrance and forgetfulness occur. Thus, whenever one fully surrenders under the Supreme Lord, he finds that he, that's the Supreme Lord, is sitting within his heart. Of course, we don't sense that if, without surrender, we're busy defending ourselves, protecting ourselves, and, you know, acting independently and trying to find happiness in a world where there isn't any. being harassed by the circumstance and thinking, oh, why is this happening? And sound familiar? He can give us direction, how to get out of the dangers, and how to approach him in devotional service. Doesn't he say that? Tadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upiyanti te. He's ready. How to get out of the distress and how to get to him. But there's a qualifier at the beginning. What's the qualifier? What does the verse say? I'm just waking up the people that were asleep. You know the verse? There you go. He's awake now. It was a long day yesterday. Tesham, unto those who satata yuktanam, are always engaged in bhajatam, priti, purvakam, completely engaged in my devotional service with love. Unto those persons, then what does he say? Dadami buddhi yogam tam. I give them buddhi yoga, the intelligence. What's the rest? Yena mam? Yena mam upiyantati. By which they can come to me. So that's what he's saying here. See how Prabhupada just takes the teachings, practically any one of the sentences, try it sometime. Go through a purport and take sentence by sentence, and he's just like pablumizing the scripture. He makes it so smooth. It's like it's every sentence is a smoothie. It's so sweet. So digestible. Even the, you know, even you don't understand, it's still sweet. It just it resonates. Anyway, so he can give us direction, how to get out of the dangers and how to approach him in devotional service. So here's Lord Brahma saying, hello, please give me your protection. So he gives him instruction. Give up that mentality. The mentality that created the problem. Give up the mentality that created the problem. And the problem is no longer yours. If we give up the sinful thought, it may be said that we give up the body, like, you know, material embodiment. Subtle is the basis of the gross. Our interest is gross. Enjoyment of senses with sense objects. Beneath that is the subtle, the mentality of false ego. Oh, it's so hard. I'm not at the center. We're going to hear some more about this during the Festival of the Holy Name. How to chant Krishna's holy name where he is at the center. You'll like it. I'm sure you're going to like it. Brahma's mind was not in correct order when he created the demons. It must have been full of passion because the entire creation was passionate. Therefore, such passionate sons were born. This is a little apparently contradictory, because if you can recall in verse 26, I just mentioned it, but Brahma said, I created this on your order, and now I'm being harassed by that which I created under your order. Because it's part of the creation is to have this, you know, this degradation feature. And now he's being afflicted by the degradation feature that he created under the Lord's order. So you by your order, this thing, I did this thing, and now it's a big mess, so please protect me from the big mess. Now, separately, here Prabhupada is saying that Brahma's mind was not in correct order when he created the demons. So how did that happen? Well, it was under the direction of the Lord. It wasn't Brahma made a boo-boo. He just like messed up. It was part of what he's supposed to do. But even so, when we don't have to be creators of universes, but we do have to do some service. And when we make a mistake in our service, it's not like Brahma, like this little scene here. But whether it's Brahma creating this scene, or we make a boo-boo in our service, Krishna is the protector. What's important is the sincerity of purpose, trying to please Krishna. And if the sincerity of purpose is there, if our attention is directed to Krishna's being satisfied, he will adjust the whole thing. That's the faith that enables us to go toward Krishna instead of on our own. Independent, no protection, I'm going to figure it out mentality. You know, the independent of Krishna mentality. It's false ego. Our dear friend. So here, at least in this section of the purport, Brahma's mind wasn't in proper order. And it was due to the passionate nature of the service he had to do. But the Lord's protection was there nonetheless. And the Lord gave him the means by which to be released from being oppressed by his mind not being in proper order. And certainly he was protected. And the last part of the purport is very similar to the topic of yesterday. This is I'll read it. It follows that any father and mother also should be very careful while begetting children. The mental condition of a child depends upon the mental status of his parents at the time he is conceived, the child. According to the Vedic system, therefore, Garbhadhan Sanskar, or the ceremony for giving birth to a child, is observed. Before begetting a child, one has to sanctify his perplexed mind. When the parents engage their minds in the lotus feet of the Lord, and in such a state the child is born, naturally the good devotee children come. When the society is full of such good population, there is no trouble from demoniac mentalities. Restating something I tried to express yesterday for the American family and friends of Ed, who were at the ceremony. Other than the Paramahansa stage, if anybody's a Paramahansa, congratulations, and the rest of us are, there's some affinity for enjoying matter. And we're trying to go to the Paramahansa stage, just to keep it simple. Go to the stage where there's complete attachment to Krishna. So in between where we are and where we want to get to, there must be some regulation. And the regulation, according to the Vedic system, is to sanctify and purify and, just like this, prepare our consciousness, prepare the mind to look towards Krishna, look towards the personality of Godhead. And then, in that way, regard matter or our affinity for being the enjoyer of matter, false ego, separate enjoyer from Krishna mentality, to withdraw that purposefully and religiously and systematically and sincerely, withdraw our mind from that mentality, which is exactly what's being told here by Lord Vishnu to Brahma. Withdraw the mind from that mentality and redirect the mind toward the personality of Godhead. So here's the affinity for matter program, and withdraw the mind from the affinity for matter, trying to be the enjoyer, independent enjoyer of matter, and regard this as personality of Godhead's, his paraphernalia, his property, and then let this traction that I have for his energy be offered to the personality of Godhead in the mood of service. And the mood of service is very much dependent upon chanting, how we conduct our chanting every day, and awakening, reawakening, strengthening the mood of service. So the mood of service predominates over the independent enjoyment mood. And so we can move about in our conditioned state, protected by the mood of service as the neutralizing agent for this affinity for enjoying matter and false ego that binds us birth after birth and event after event and misery after misery to more misery. We don't like the misery. We like the enjoyment. But we get the misery. And, you know, why is God doing this? We're nice. We're trying to be nice. It's a common theme of how people ask their questions about why is there suffering in the world and stuff like that. Why do bad things happen to good people? They're not good people. Or they're not transcendental people. It's still the affinity for enjoying matter mentality. So the price of release from suffering is no longer consider yourself at the center. It's not about your happiness or distress. It's Krishna's happiness. That's transcendental life. And then we can give up the body. Give up the mentality of, you know, the past material contact that we had and our likes and dislikes due to past material contact. That's all it is. One person likes and the other person doesn't like. The same thing. And then we try to have relationships. What one person likes and the other person doesn't like. We've got a problem. Because we're not thinking about Krishna's happiness. And sanctified Krishna conscious relationships is Krishna's happiness. And that's the goal. Then we can have a relationship, a nice relationship, because we're helping one another to go towards Krishna's happiness. That's giving up the material mentality. And the real foundation of it is the chanting of the holy name and the guidance that comes from Krishna Katha, how to conduct our lives properly. That's what's it's within this little section here. Very valuable instruction. Okay, I'm going to end. Any discussion? Yes, Simon.
Guru Maharaj, just clarifying Lord Brahma's impure state when he was doing his service, the symptom that it was happening, and obviously he was very sincere and serious, but when he, the part that it says that when he created the demons and he created the
Yakshas and Rakshas
and all that, he was completely disgusted about it.
Yeah.
That was a symptom of his the office and been afflicted by the previous whatever contact he had with passion and all that.
Can I ask for some clarification on your question? You want to know from where was this feeling of disgust arising?
Right.
That's what you want to know.
Exactly. If that was the actual impurity that he was, I mean, the symptom of that impurity.
Now you add a qualifier. Was that a symptom of his impurity that he was feeling some disgust?
Correct.
That's your question.
Yeah.
No. It's a symptom of his affinity for the quality of goodness. A person who has an affinity for the quality of goodness likes that which resonates with goodness, or resembles or exemplifies goodness. And when he saw the other, disgust. Okay. It's a little touchy. So supposing someone is a Mayavadi. Supposing someone has no material contact. They're, let's not say a Mayavadi, a Brahmavadi. Someone's a Brahmavadi. They're completely in touch with Brahman. They're completely neutral to duality. Okay? So they see equally this and that. Duality. So that looks like not Lord Brahma, because he sees this low great thing and he's disgusted. So that may be, your question is that his part of his contamination? Or his impurity? It's arising from his impurity. Right. As opposed to being a Brahman realized person who's literally absolutely neutral towards everything. Like, let's say, Rishabdev, and not Brahmavadi, but he was in his Avaduta exhibition of pastimes, just to get people to leave him alone, he smeared his body with stool, because it's so it smelled bad, people leave him alone, kind of, like, you know, indifferent to disgusting things. So that looks like Brahma's disgust was arising from his limit, his less than perfectly pure condition. However, there was some discussion where recently one new devotee, Bhakta, somewhere, was saying, you know, I don't know why people get all concerned about, you know, violence in this world, because after all, it's only duality. He was referring to a specific something where some terrorists came into some home and they wanted the family to do some abominable thing, and the child refused, so they took the child and shot him. I forget the detail. He said, you know, people were enraged, it went viral all over the internet, and, you know, I don't know why, it's, you know, it's just their karma, and, you know, they're just getting their karma, and who, you know, everyone should be neutral to all circumstances of life, it's only illusion anyway, and what's the big deal? Go back to the personality of Godhead. Is compassionate, And he sees those circumstances, although he's speaking of this neutrality, and certainly in one sense, Somaham Sarva Bhuteshu Na Me Dveshosti Na Priyaha. He's neutral. At the same time, he has compassion for the conditioned living entities who are suffering in the material world. Or the great devotees are moved, like Vyasadeva, or anyone you want to think of. They're moved. Or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, moved with compassion for the fallen conditioned souls. Prabhupada, you know, he was moved by compassion for the fallen conditioned souls. This one little story, I circulated it some time ago, and I'll just repeat it because it's nice. In the late 60s, no, 67, something like that, Prabhupada had a heart attack in New York. And so he was taken to the Jersey Shore to a hospital, and then for convalescing, he was, you know, by the seaside in a nice place, and devotees were there assisting Prabhupada, just getting his association. And so this little passage where one devotee was just sitting chanting on a mat next to Prabhupada, was seated in a chair, and they saw crawling on the ground a slug. Remember this little passage? And they looked down and went, ugh, yuck. And so Prabhupada leaned over from his chair and looked down and said, chant for the poor thing. How much suffering is he undergoing? Chant. And the devotee said, I realize this is how Prabhupada looks upon us. You know, we're slug-like beings, just slithering here and there in, you know, the darkness of ignorance. And Prabhupada's just taking compassion upon us. And because he's taking compassion upon us, there's some hope. So having feelings for the misfortune of others is not a contamination. And seeing contamination as contamination is not contamination. Now, so if the action is out of devotion, not just like, oh, I like this and I don't like that, duality, and my brand of duality is over here and that brand of duality over there, it repulses me. That's conditioning. But thinking of the soul and the misfortune of the soul, in, you know, caught up in that circumstance, and therefore, what can I do in service, whether I actually do something or don't do something, having the spirit of compassion for the well-being of the soul on the soul platform, that's important. That's not contamination. Because you're bringing the question up, it's a nice question. It's something that's important for us to understand really simply. We should be very careful how we regard Lord Brahma, because he's the head of our sampradaya. We shouldn't think of him like us. Anything that he does like this is something, if there is something, it's like Krishna inducing him to do that something, like Krishna inducing Arjuna to forget his position as Krishna's dearmost friend and devotee. He forgets that by Krishna's arrangement, so Krishna can speak Bhagavad Gita. Similarly, Brahma is super qualified. We can't even conceive of how qualified Lord Brahma is. So something that may resemble what to us would be contamination isn't contamination. We should be very careful. Remember hearing one lecture, it was a morning walk conversation, and a devotee was asking Prabhupada, Lord Brahma becoming attracted to his own daughter, how are we to think of that? And Prabhupada became very angry, saying, he's pure enough, like stern. He's the head of Amparo Sampradaya.